To answer is human. To question is divine. Welcome to the world of the Hidden Gateway, an exhilarating podcast exploring the concepts humans have been struggling with since the dawn of existence, such as, who are we? Is there such a thing as good and evil, or are they arbitrary constructs? Does the paranormal exist? How can we evolve to a higher state? Can our mind influence what we term as reality? Providing a transcendental approach combined with hard-nosed humanistic analysis, we invite you on a journey to question your worldview in this theater of life. Join our host, Justin Williams, as he explores the outer realms of faith, the supernatural, human potential, and even our concepts of the universal creator with a fascinating array of guests. This is the unseen world, magical, mysterious, and mystical, where your only limitation is your imagination. This is the Hidden Gateway.
Welcome back to another episode of the Hidden Gateway podcast. As always, I'm your host, Justin Williams. Today's guest is a freelance investigative journalist, documentary filmmaker, author, and public speaker seeking to expose corruption, find solutions to the problems that affect all of humanity, and promote localization and decentralization. Additionally, he has officially entered the 2023 race as a mayoral candidate, calling for giving away the power of the mayor of Houston, amplifying the voices of Houstonians, and exposing the corruption at City Hall. Derek Bros, welcome to the Hidden Gateway podcast. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, brother.
Absolutely. And once again, thank you for being here, man. You know, Derek, I first learned about you, man, maybe a month and a half, 2 months ago. And you are a very, very, very interesting person. You have a lot going on. Your story is very compelling as well. Now, I know, obviously, my audience doesn't know yet. So if you could just please take a few moments to kind of give us your background a little bit and, you know, everything you've gone through to get you to where you are today.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, you introduced a little bit about some of the work I do today, from doing journalism. I write articles regularly, do kind of long form investigations at thelastamericanvagabond.com. I produce documentaries and I've written a few books and, you know, do interviews and just basically independent journalism. I also have a radio show based in Houston, where I'm originally from. And I've been doing this sort of life, this kind of work for the last going on 14 years now. And it's been, I mean, an amazing journey. There was really no plan or vision or sort of idea at the beginning of like, all right, I'm going to get into activism and it'll turn into all these other things. It was just really kind of coming at it from a very pure place of, you know, waking up, as people often say, starting to question certain systems around me, and then starting to want to focus on solutions. Like, I want to talk to more people about this. I want to spread these ideas, and how can I be more involved in my community and such like that. And it just evolved over the last years. But really, one of the first topics that I started to look at was the drug war itself. Specifically, I read a book called Cannabis, A History, which is a pretty good book. That's just, it's a pretty objective look at cannabis and as it relates to the drug war. So it talks about like the historical impact of the plant, the sociological impact, the legal situation, the scientific background of the cannabis plant, and just all this information that I really didn't know before. And I wasn't taught in high school or college or anything, which was really just about how, the big oil interests, along with, racist politicians in the U.S. were promoting, you know, well, for one, oil wanted to get rid of hemp as an energy source, but also they're promoting the idea that either Chinese migrants or black jazz musicians were smoking weed and were going to come attack the white people and just silly stuff like that. And it was, that reading that book was just a very big eye opener, especially because I was reading it at a point in my life when I was just getting out of prison. When I was 20 years old, after kind of struggling with depression at a very young age and suicide attempts and such, I ended up getting addicted to crystal meth in 2005. And by the end of 2005, after about 10, 11 months, I was locked up right before I turned 21. And so that's what really, I think, you know, quote unquote, woke me up, is just getting locked up. You know, the feeling of, which I don't think too many people really experience, but the feeling of being completely powerless, or at least you believe it that way at the beginning, you know, where like, it doesn't matter how much you cry or yell or scream or, you know, get on the phone and talk to mom, wife, girlfriend, lawyer, or anything, like, you're not leaving until these people say you can leave, right? And just that feeling of like, wow, I'm no longer in control of when I eat, and when I go to bed, and all that kind of stuff. It was actually a very empowering moment. It was the moment, they think, that helped me realize, like, I need to figure out why I'm here and how I got here, especially because I come from a family, on both sides of my family, of men, at least three generations going back, of men with addiction, drug and alcohol addiction, with prison. Great-grandfather hung himself in prison. Like, you know, just, it was something, my father was in and out of prison my entire life, and he died of a drug overdose a couple of years ago. So it's something that I've grown up around, been around my entire life. So when I got locked up at 20, going into 21, it was just like a real kick in the chest. Like, all right, man, what are you doing? You know, what are you trying to do with your life? Because I've already seen what that path leads to. And that was really the beginning of me kind of opening up spiritually as well. I started meditating, started praying, and kind of just digging into my own trauma, looking at that relationship with my father and like, hey, why am I here? Why have I been just using drugs to avoid things? You know, it's not like I was really happy. I was just medicating, self-medicating and such. So, you know, with time, I started to open up, and now, like, it's been 18 years since then. So with the beauty of hindsight, I can see these things so clearly. At the time, though, I didn't know this. I was just like, oh my God, I'm in prison. What's happening? How did I get here? I need to figure this out. And it was a couple years of back and forth. I did a year, got out for 6 months, went back for a bit. You know, I did that whole thing. And I got out for the final time, October 2008. And that was right around the time Obama was getting elected. And then I didn't really know much about politics. But as I said, about a year later, as a felon now, can't get a job anywhere, can't get rent anywhere. I'm at the library all the time applying for jobs. I decided to check out some of the library books, and one of them was Cannabis: A History. And that kind of opened me up of like, wow, holy crap, this is stuff I was never taught. And then that sort of just made me think, well, what else is there? And then that, you know, really opened the door to a lot of my activism and journalism. But it really, for me, started with that, going through those experiences.
Awesome, man. That's some story, man. You're a strong, strong man. I tell you, to go through everything you went through and to be where you are today. I love it. I love it. And me personally, I'm not sure how you feel about it, but I personally believe that we all go through certain things for a reason, right? And those reasons shape our realities, and those things are put in place to get us to where we need to be. So, hey, man, hats off to you, brother. Cause I tell you,
thank you,
and talking to my audience now, I want everyone to check out his website. I'll have him provide the website, social media, all that information a bit later, but Derek is truly doing some amazing things within the community. As he said, he's been doing things for many, many years now. And knowing my audience, I know you all will appreciate what he's doing. So be sure to check him out. Now, just want to talk about the first investigative journalism things that you do, man. I saw a recent video where you were talking about your concerns regarding 5G. Then I saw that you have a 17-part documentary series called The Pyramid of Power, which seems very interesting. I have not had the opportunity to check it out, but I think I may do a little binge watching this weekend.
Yeah, it's made for that, man. Yeah, I'll tell you about the Pyramid of Power then. People can find it at thepyramidofpower.net. And as you said, it's a 17-part documentary series that originally it started as a presentation I was giving. I did a U.S. speaking tour, you know, grassroots tour with me and my partner. We were traveling around the U.S. I think we did something ridiculous, like 50 cities across the U.S. over a couple of months, and hosting events, going out to, you know, and what I love about getting out and talking to people in person, it wasn't just like I was sharing my message and my partner was leading a meditation, and we were bringing the community together, but we were also, every community we were visiting on tour, we were going out and doing, you know, volunteering at a community garden or supporting the homeless in some way, or trying to bring people together. And in my view, like, showing people, like, we need to be more involved in our local communities. So we were out on tour, and I was giving this presentation that was called The Pyramid of Power. It was the beginning of what would become this series. And I tried to do it on tour, and it worked out to some degree, but it was like 2.5 hours long, and it probably could have been longer. You know, I just had to shorten it up a bit. And the more I thought about this, I was like, this is not the right format for this information. Like, I need to, you know, I think, and I've been doing more documentaries over the years. So I decided I wanted to produce this series, which would be exactly what you said, like a bingeable for the Netflix generation. I aim to make every episode 30 minutes or less. There's, I think, only two that are a little bit over 35 and one that go to 45. That's a little bit, you know, there's a lot to cover, but for the most part, they're all under 30 minutes. And what I wanted to do was start at, you know, the building blocks of this idea, this, you know, conspiracy theory that there are people that rule the world, let's say. I wanted to look at this from a very objective way as a journalist who cares about the truth and everything, that's in the documentary series. You can go to thepyramidofpower.net and look at the chapters, and you see all the sources, the entire script, and it links to everything that I'm speaking about. There's nothing in there that is not verified and sourced in some way. And if I get into any sort of my personal opinions, the listener knows. But the goal was to take these big ideas and try to explore, like, let's look at the education system and see what kind of influences are there. Let's look at big tech. Let's look at the media. Let's look at the prison system. Let's look at the food system and all these different areas, the medical cartel. And as we progressively kind of work our way up the pyramid to really paint a picture to people, to show people who maybe haven't gone down these particular rabbit holes and maybe even dismiss them as conspiracy theory. So as I said, every episode starts with just, here's the details you need to know. What I try to do is take the best information from the books that have already been written, the documentaries that have already been done, and my own research, and just give people the most important facts that are going to help convince them in 30 minutes or less that this is something they need to know more about. And so we spend probably the first 20, 25 minutes explaining, breaking down the history of the education system, for example. And then we get to, at the end of each episode, I do solutions. So I make suggestions on, here's solutions for this particular topic that we're exploring. And then at the end of every episode, I make book recommendations and documentary recommendations for people who might want to go, you know, even deeper down the rabbit hole. So we have released 12 episodes so far. We've been releasing them in episodes of four episodes a season, basically. And so the 13th episode should be coming out by the end of March, if not early April. And the entire thing should be done if everything goes well. I'm doing all the research, all the writing of the scripts, and I record the audio narration, and I work with an amazing team of editors to make it really shine. So, you know, it's a labor of love. We're putting it out for free. Probably when it's all done, we'll do like USB drives or DVDs and something like that. But really for me, I want to give people a tool to educate themselves, but also, let's say you have friends and family, if you're already well-versed in these topics, some of the information's not going to be new to you. You'll maybe enjoy the packaging, but you'll know what I'm talking about. Hopefully there's some new stuff. But what about your friends, your family who aren't necessarily going to watch a 3-hour documentary that you try to get them to watch, or read a 2,000-word article, or, you know, this kind of thing. But if you can get them to sit down and just say, hey, 30 minutes, just watch this with me, just 30 minutes. And then let's talk about what, and if they get sucked in, the idea is, okay, well, let's go to the next one. And then before you know it, they watch all 17, their mind's blown. And, you know, we see where it goes from there.
I like that. I like that, man. Good, great strategy there, man. And then tell me about 5G, man. I mean, I know a little bit about it. I've heard what people have had to say over the last couple of years here. What are your thoughts on it?
So I started investigating 5G in Houston back in the late summer 2018. And this was because I really didn't know much about 5G at the time, or what that really even meant. I knew it had to do with cell phones and wireless networks. And I will say, over the years, you know, I started taking my journalism pretty seriously in 2013, 2014. So about a decade now. And I've seen stories pop up over the years talking about claims of cancers associated with with cell phone use back in the early 90s and into the early 2000s, which you don't hear a lot about that. People assume these things must be safe if we're using them all the time, putting them next to our heads. So I kind of heard a little bit of these claims about the dangers of electromagnetic frequencies, EMFs. But I also noticed that, just like many of these topics, that if you choose to write about that or explore that, then in polite society, you're deemed a conspiracy theorist, right? You can't be a credible journalist and dare question if cell phones are safe, just like you can't question if the fluoride in the water is safe, and all these other kind of things that really, when you look into them, there's mountains of evidence that are worth looking further into. But so I was kind of, you know, already a little like, all right, what's going to happen? But the mayor of Houston announced that he was hosting a press conference with the CEO of Verizon Wireless, this Swedish gentleman who was coming all the way to Houston, and they were announcing the world's first 5G installation. And I don't know if that was accurate or if it's a marketing ploy, but definitely Houston was one of the earliest places. And so I happened to be in town, and I went to this press event, and they had this young couple, you know, in their early 20s, living in like the nice neighborhood near downtown, midtown area. And they brought all the local news and stuff as they installed, like, this, you know, it was kind of a silly thing, but it gave me a chance to kind of brush up on the topic. And so I did some research before going to this press conference. I found that there have been some studies associated even before 5G, but with 2G and 3G and 1G. And since the beginning of cell phones, there have been concerns and scientific evidence and research, but it's often buried, looking at the potential for cancers and tumors, brain tumors, particularly with people holding the phones by their head all day, or now Bluetooth, which is another kind of concern. So I had enough information to go there and ask the CEO of Verizon and ask the mayor, hey, what do you think about these studies who make these claims? You know, is this something people should be concerned about? And ask them the question. And I got those videos out there, but their answers were pretty much just very dismissive, which has been my experience with local politicians trying to ask them. You know, most they're used to basically all the local news just wanting to, they want to get invited to the dinners and the galas and the fancy events, so they don't push too hard, right? And I show up with my, you know, in the beginning with just like my little camera, like, hey, can I ask you a question, and ruining everybody's good time by asking a real question. But it showed me, like, just the response was like, okay, I think there's something worth looking into. And so from September till about September 2018 till, well, pretty much for 2 years straight, I was researching 5G, not only as it relates to what was going on in Houston. I did about 7 or 8 city council visits, going to Houston City Council and just giving them study and dropping information with them and quoting doctors. And I would take those clips from city council and I would put them out on my YouTube channel. And one of them, the first one I did in early 2018, got over 1 million views before YouTube deleted my channel in October 2020. They were resonating with people, but not only, I think, the information, but just there were some times when I did have a couple council members willing to listen to me. But the problem is in Houston, the current mayor of Houston, Sylvester Turner, who's this is his last year, he was given literally, this is the crazy sequence of events. In July of 2018, Houston announces they want to partner with these big tech companies to turn Houston into a 5G smart city. By September, he's awarded the 5G Champion Award by the Cellular Telephone Internet Association, which basically represents the big wireless lobby. And then by October, the CEO of Verizon's in Houston and they're announcing the first 5G installation. So I was, you know, learning this all after the fact and just starting to see, like, wow, there's so much corruption. People don't really necessarily think in terms of, like, people are aware of, like, the military industrial complex and funding for war or corporations like Monsanto, but maybe don't think so much about the big wireless companies and how much influence they have, how much influence they have over advertising, donating to newspapers. Obviously, the relationships between the government and the corporations that are involved in the wireless industry, it's a pretty huge thing. And so I just got a huge education over 2 years. And actually in February 2020, I think it was, yeah, February 2020, right as COVID was beginning, I put out a documentary called The 5G Trojan Horse, which people can find for free on my website, theconsciousresistance.com. All of my documentaries, including the Pyramid of Power, we have the main Pyramid of Power website, but if you just go to theconsciousresistance.com, you can check out my books and documentaries, and you can watch The 5G Trojan Horse, and it's about an hour and a half long, and it chronicles not only like my personal journey of like, hey, I'm a guy from Houston, I started investigating 5G, this is what I found, and here's, and it just shows you all the information, like the interviews I was conducting with doctors, with scientists, with, so, you know, there's like, there's privacy concerns about 5G and smart cities that in order for this to work the way they claim it's going to work, they have to install towers every 200 to 500 feet. So in Houston, people are already getting towers put next to their churches, next to their homes, like right outside their windows. And that's in order for this supposedly superior network to work, there has to be antennas in all these different places, like in a level that we've never seen before in history, in order for it to be a true 5G network. So nowhere really has 5G right now. Like most of it is just marketing, the cell phone companies putting 5G networks, but it's not true 5G yet, but it's been in the process. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think a lot of people don't recognize that the companies are selling it, like AT&T and others. And you'll see like on your Wi-Fi sometimes 5G, but that's 5 gigahertz. It's a separate thing. But a true 5G network, as they've promoted and explained it, for one, like 5G is just a particular set of frequencies, right? So 1G was this band, like let's just say like 50 to 70 and on the frequency, that's where 1G devices were. And then after 10 years, they do it every 10 years, they introduce a new generation. So one first generation, second generation, all the way up now to the fifth generation, which is a new frequency band. And then they're already talking about 6G. And really what this is about, they say that these technologies are going to allow for the creation of smart cities, which is what they're trying to do in Houston, where we're going to have driverless cars and robot assistants, and it's going to be great for the environment, and it's going to be very convenient. You'll have digital currency and digital IDs. And of course, they only tell people about the positive potentials of this. But so the 5G topic, it's not just like the health concerns, which is a huge thing, obviously, and there are plenty of data on that. But then there's also the privacy concerns associated with what 5G is really about bringing in. There's the property concerns. I mean, really, it's one of these biggest examples of how us as people, like specifically in the US, Americans like have no say in this matter. It started in the 90s when they passed the Telecommunications Act. And from the very beginning, the wireless corporations have had so much power. They made it from the very beginning, before 5G was even a thing, back in 2G, where localities like cities, town councils, et cetera, cannot say no to the towers. The only thing you can do is if you think it looks ugly, they'll paint it for you. They'll turn it to look like a palm tree or, you know, that kind of thing. But you literally have no power on the local level. I mean, and so the only thing that you could do, and what I've tried to do, what I tried to do in 2019 when I ran for mayor, largely on the 5G issue, and this time as well, is saying, okay, as mayor or whatever official, we're going to put a moratorium, a hold on all installations of 5G towers until we get more information, until we do more research, or, you know, till the people are actually consulted. And what that would do is immediately you would get sued by Verizon, T-Mobile, et cetera. And it would basically just have to go to court. But as far as they're concerned, the law already claims that we have no power over it. So, I mean, to me, like that issue itself, the last couple of years, especially around COVID, it got pulled into all these different conspiracy theories and kind of different ideas. But when you really look at it, it's a topic that, again, I mean, it's about health, it's about privacy, it's about having a choice locally in these kind of matters. And, you know, it affects the plants, there's shown studies on impacting the trees and things. So, I mean, there's no matter what sort of political argument you want to make, there's good reasons to be questioning that particular topic.
Wow, very informative. Thank you so much for that, man. And, you know, a couple of times you mentioned, corruption, right? And obviously you're running for mayor of Houston. And I know two of the main goals of your campaign are exposing the corruption in City Hall, as well as amplifying the voice of the people of Houston. So can you kind of go into what type of corruption that you've identified that's going on in the city?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of things, man. I mean, one of them was what I was just talking about with the current mayor, Sylvester Turner. So I ran in 2019. As I said, like 2018 was when I started investigating 5G. And I spent that whole year going to city council, doing the things that we're told we're supposed to do, right? You have a problem, you go to your council, express your voice, and the people will be heard and something will happen, right? Well, that's not the case in Houston, at least. Maybe in smaller towns. I mean, Houston's the fourth largest city in the U.S. Maybe it's too big, too corrupt. But I've been going to city council since 2010, 2011 for homeless issues, police violence issues, 5G, fluoride in the water. I mean, a number of different topics and issues. And every single time, I would say 90% of those times have been met with either just total ignorance of the council members, just kind of talking to themselves, laughing among themselves, playing on their phones, not even paying any attention. And you get your 2 to 3 minutes, which is on a Tuesday at 3 in the afternoon. So people got to take off work, got to take off school, come all the way downtown. You know, it's not easy for everybody. And I've seen not only myself, but plenty of other people that I've met there that they go up there, you know, they took time to write a speech and they go up there and they're okay, here's like what I got to say. They're a little nervous. And then it's like, all right, next, your time's up. And you see them kind of look around like, that was it? Okay. And so, you know, I've started questioning just, do these people really care? Like, why is it like this, right? And one of the reasons I decided to run, in addition to 5G, it kind of relates to all these issues, is that I learned that Houston's, well, let me take a step back. So one of the issues I was fighting was fluoride in the water. And again, it's another issue that affects people in so many ways. I think if you care about financial waste in government, there's putting $5 million in the city of Houston to put this poison in the water. There's health reasons. Again, there's concerns about that. I've been doing a lot of reporting on that. If you care about, like, say, looking after the poor people in the lower economic areas, well, those are typically the people who can't afford to buy filters to get fluoride out, who can't, you know, afford to get away from these things. So they're probably drinking tap water, which is filled with this toxin. They're cooking with it. They're showering, right? So no matter what angle you take, there's an opportunity here to talk about this. And so we started a group called Fluoride for Houston. And for years, we were doing what I was just describing, going to city council, setting up meetings with them. Okay, who do we got? Okay, we got three council members on our side. And it sometimes you're just like banging your head against the wall, trying to get anybody to care, right? And eventually I came to realize that all this work was not going to make a difference, because in Houston has one of the strongest mayoral positions in the country. I think Denver is the only other city that is as strong. There's other cities that call it a strong mayoral position, but for whatever reason, Houston and Denver, their charters, the way they were written more than 100 years ago, make the mayor like basically a local dictator. So in Houston, there's the mayor and there's 16 council members. Let's say we got all 16 council members concerned about fluoride or police violence or 5G or any topic. And they're saying, hey, you know, my people are writing me, they're calling me, they're coming up here. Like, let's bring this to the table. The mayor ultimately, and not just the current mayor, but whoever's mayor, has the power to say no. The mayor gets to decide what goes on the agenda, which is then what actually gets discussed, and then what actually could be eventually voted on and, you know, and heard. So say, for example, when somebody like me is coming up to go to city council to talk about fluoride in the water, that's not on the official agenda. So that means they put me at the very bottom, right? So that means I have to wait there for 2 or 3 hours. Half the council members are gone. You know, they're not really paying attention. They're mainly there for those agenda items. You know, they say that it's public comment, but there's no guarantee they're going to listen or they're even going to be there. So, you know, by that time you've been there for 3-4 hours and you go up there and you say your thing and nobody cares. So the way to do that would be you would need to get it on the agenda. But again, as I said a moment ago, the mayor has ultimate control over that. And I realize that no matter how hard we fought for fluoride or police violence or they got a law in Houston that says it's illegal to share food with people. No matter how hard we fought to get these things changed, if the mayor says no, he, she, whoever, then it's not going to go anywhere. And so one of the major things I'm running on, as you mentioned earlier, and that I'm running on again, is to take away the power of the mayor. The idea is that we would change the city charter so that if 1/3 of the council, which if there's 16 members, so let's say you get three and a half, right? So if you get 3 council members to say, hey, this issue is important to my people, that it would automatically be placed on the agenda, which that means it could be further discussed and, you know, debated, and then potentially a resolution or whatever needs to happen could be introduced. And it would take away the mayor's ability to just say, no, that's not going to happen. And in terms of like the 5G example, I was saying the mayor has been given the 5G champion award by the wireless industry that we're trying to call out and talk about. So of course he's not going to, you know, he's literally, you can go see about 6 different confrontations I've done to this mayor, bringing a camera and a phone and a microphone in his face, asking him to respond. He just laughs, oh, you're the 5G guy, and just tries to laugh it off and ignore it, because he knows that I can't, you know, ultimately I can't do anything. He knows that no matter what I do, I can go to council, I can talk and this and that, him. And he's like, okay, thanks. You know, and he goes on. And so it is a major problem. So when I ran in 2019, on that platform, among other issues. But that was the main thing, because everything comes back to that, right? I want to talk about getting rid of police surveillance tools. I want to talk about this thing. But all of that comes back to, if the mayor doesn't, you know, if the mayor has power, then maybe I do something good as mayor, but then the next one comes in and just overturns it, right? So you need the council members to have more power. Ideally, that means the people would have more power, because then you would know you could actually go to your city council member and they could do something, right? Like, for example, I've had people say, well, Derek, you know, why don't you go run for council member and get some experience and then go for mayor? It's like, well, for one, I don't want to be a politician. I'm just running to reach people and to spread these ideas. But right. Also, I don't want to be in a neutered position where, like, I wouldn't be able to do anything, right? Because as a council member, you basically have to listen to what the mayor says. So, yeah, and the interesting thing, other thing I'll say on this is, after the 2019 election, I didn't win, obviously, but what was a cool thing is when I was on the stage of the debates and the forums with these other candidates, not only could people tell the difference between somebody like myself who has a thought or two in their head and these politicians who just have empty slogans, so people could see the difference. But the other candidates started to steal this idea. They started to say, we do need to take away the power of the mayor. So I was like, all right, they're listening, right? And so much so that in 2020, the summer after the election ended, November 2019, a coalition of groups came together, I think in parts inspired by my campaign, and they gathered petition signatures and actually got that put on to be available to vote. So this November, whenever it's the election in Houston for the mayor and the city council, Houstonians will also be able to vote specifically on just this thing. Should we change the charter to take away the power of the mayor? So that could change Houston's history. I mean, realistically. Yeah. So I'm running again to make sure that that issue stays front and center, whether people like me or not, just saying like, hey, whatever issue you care about, vote to take away the power of the mayor so we can all have more of a voice.
Awesome, man. I applaud you for that. That is awesome. That's going to be on in November, brother. Good, good. Definitely wishing very best of luck to you and everything you're doing in that regard. Just have a couple more questions for you, man, before we wrap this thing up. You are part of something that really resonates with me and that I find extremely interesting, and that are the freedom cells. So what exactly are freedom cells? If you could tell our audience and let us know why we need them.
Sure. So I was first introduced to this idea from my friend John Bush, who's also based in Texas, and he's another longtime liberty freedom activist, works in a lot of different areas. And in 2015, he gave a presentation that I heard where he was just talking about, like, how can we get more organized in our local communities, right? Like I've said earlier, like a lot of my activism, I do articles and stuff about big national and international topics, but it's always been important to me to make sure I have a foot in my local community, right? There's a lot of people who are just activists on the internet, but for me, I want to make sure I'm connected locally. And so this has been something that's been important to me. Like, how can I get more people organized, and how can we start thinking about solutions, not just go protest and complain and do the marches and the rallies? I'm there for that. It's important to express our voices. But if we're just doing that, like we're going to protest Monsanto, for example, and, you know, the poisoning the food or this and that thing, but we're not turning around and building gardens in our communities, then we're only, you know, doing one part of the equation as far as I'm concerned, right? So I've always been interested in how do we build local power? How do we create local independence and community interdependence and these kind of ideas? And John was, he had heard this idea originally called Octologue, which was based on the idea of bringing eight people together. And this is from a book called Flourish. There was these two researchers, one of them is a psychologist, who were studying group dynamics and groups, like what's the ideal group size? Like how can you create the most ideal number of people to come together? And, you know, there's different research out there. I'm sure there's plenty of other opinions, but they and their research concluded that eight people and in the range of 7 to 10 is like the ideal range for a group. They believe that if you have too many beyond that, then things can kind of get too chaotic and too hard to organize. And if you only have, say, 2, 3, or 4 people, you can get some stuff done, but maybe not bigger projects. And so they felt like this number 8 was an ideal group size. And they also had their own theories about groups should be, you know, four male and four women come together. And, you know, so, but we took some inspiration just from that idea of groups of 8 and started to talk about what if we in our local communities in Houston and Detroit and Mexico and India, all over the world, just everybody started to meet more people in their local community. That's like the first step. Okay, I want to find other people who are interested in solutions, right? Instead of just talking about the problems in the world, let's talk about the solutions and what can we do in our local community about this, right? If you're concerned about rising food prices, egg prices and stuff like that, then let's get our group together locally and say, hey guys, what can we do to build some food security here? Maybe we can all plant backyard gardens in our houses, or we can all join a community garden and volunteer and start to learn. And just different, having that conversation. And the cool idea about this is what we call freedom cells, these local decentralized groups of 8, is that each one is unique and independent all on its own. So, you know, the needs of the Houston Freedom Cell, even as it gets bigger, like we started with one Houston Freedom Cell with myself and some other people. And as this idea grew, we realized like, well, some people are driving from the north side of town an hour to get here for the meeting. Why don't you guys start the North Houston Freedom Cell and y'all meet on maybe a weekly or semi-weekly basis. And then once a month, all of our groups get together for like a bigger potluck gathering and share ideas. What have you guys been working on? This kinds of thing. And we take inspiration, we learn from each other, but basically what works in one city or one country or one state isn't necessarily going to work elsewhere, but we can learn from each other and we can say, okay, look, you know, this freedom cell over here is focusing on food. Some of the food they're growing won't grow in our region, but let's see what we can do. And let's do that. And the idea is that as these groups are starting to be created ultimately all around the world, that we are creating this parallel network of individuals and communities that are trying to build new systems. I mean, in the eyes of myself and John, we're the co-founders of the Freedom Cell Network, which is at freedomcells.org. That's CELLS, like the cells in your body. You know, every cell is unique and powerful and individual, but it's also part of the larger network, which is your body, you, right? And that's kind of how we see the Freedom Cell Network. There's these local independent groups that are all doing different things. And sometimes some are more active than others. Some are really just doing great things, growing food together, maybe homeschooling their kids or whatever things they're interested in, right? Again, it's dependent on the people who get involved. If it's like, let's say a freedom cell is a bunch of parents, then probably they're going to be focused on like doing things for their kids, or you know, let's homeschool our kids together. Let's learn about peaceful parenting or whatever their focus would be. But that doesn't mean that that's what all freedom cells need to do, right? We take ideas from each other, but ultimately each freedom cell is independent. You know, on the website, we do establish some basic principles that we think are important for people who want to join the website and kind of get connected to our listing of groups, which is basically that Freedom Cells is a nonviolent movement. We're not here organizing, saying we need to overthrow the government to fix problems or anything like that. We're apolitical. So, you know, despite me in my own life, I'm running for office to reach people. The Freedom Cells movement isn't a political movement. So it's not a place for people to come sign up and promote this political candidate or this political candidate. So it's nonviolent. It's apolitical. It's decentralized. So we think that again, we can learn from each other, but ultimately what Derek Brose says isn't what every freedom cell needs to do. And you don't even need to call it a freedom cell, right? We just take inspiration and learn from each other. It's focused locally. So the group should be focused on what can you do in your own community. And then apolitical, decentralization, nonviolent, and solutions focused. So, you know, you might notice that in a lot of these circles, people who are starting to pay attention to the world, they sometimes tend to get obsessive and they only focus on the problem. And they're just constantly like reading this crazy news or watching this documentary. It's important to be educated. But if you just do that so much that you get paralyzed by fear, or you're just doing nothing because you're like, well, everything's screwed, right? Why should I bother? Then you're not really helping anybody. And so we really tried to create the Freedom Cells website and some of the groups that are organized on Telegram and other platforms, just keep them focused in that way. So people can sign up for free at freedomcells.org. You create a free profile, put what your interests are, which skills you have to offer, what things you want to learn, you know, make it as detailed as possible, because the main feature is once you join the site, you get access to our maps. We have a member map and a cell map. So you can go search, you know, you put your don't put your home address, but put like the town you live in, right? We're not asking for anybody's personal home address, but you put yourself on there. So then now you're on the map. So other people coming after you, and just like yourself, you're looking for people near you. You can go search, okay, show me all the people within 20 miles of me. And they'll populate on the map. You can click on their profile. Okay, now that doesn't really sound like somebody that I want to work with. Oh, wait, this person has same interests that I'm focused on learning. Let me contact them. Oh my God, they're already part of a local group. They have a meeting coming up. Let me go there and leave the website behind, connect in the real world, start organizing. And you know, I talked about food and all kinds of different things. Ultimately, whatever a freedom cell becomes or whatever people want to call them, sometimes people call them circles, hubs, hives, whatever. It doesn't really matter. The goal is that we're just trying to encourage people to get connected on a local level, and not just because, you know, even though the internet has allowed us all to come together from all over the world, we're often very disconnected from our own communities. So this is our encouragement to say, like, let's each start focusing on our own backyard, right? And then collectively, as we do that, we're building strength. And we think in the long term that these groups and this network that is evolving, because some people are also using freedom cells to meet others, to buy land, to grow, you know, they want to build a community or things like that. And we envision in the long term that this could be an alternative network to connect with the like-minded people who've got the good organic food, who have clean water, and who are talking about things that maybe folks listening to this podcast would be interested in, right? And so it's an early project, but we've been at it for 6 or 7 years. And I will say that before COVID happened, we had about 2,000 people on the website. Now we're just at 40,000 people from around the world. So, and I'm sure there's at least 10,000 more who are spread around Telegram or just doing it, who take an inspiration from the idea, and, you know, they don't put it on the internet. They're just out there doing things in their community. And yeah, I mean, it's a big part of what I do, promoting this idea and helping people see that there are real solutions. And I think the most impactful solution is coming together in community and family, you know, whatever that means for you, because none of us alone can really take on all the different struggles going on in the world.
Isn't that the truth, man? I love that. I love it. That's something I'm definitely going to be involved in myself. And I see that being huge. I see a lot of people doing that in the near future. And it's going to probably be a way of life for a lot of people at one point, hopefully sooner than later. So thank you for that. You know, Derek, I have one final question for you, sir. This is something I ask each and every guest that appears on the Hidden Gateway podcast, is to leave our listeners with what I like to call a token of love, simply something that you think the people need to hear in this moment as they go forward on their personal journeys.
Absolutely, brother. Well, again, thank you for having me and for your efforts to reach people and bring some important conversations to them. I appreciate everybody who's taken the time to tune into this and give me a chance to share my ideas. You know, I think what's important right now in this beautifully chaotic time we're alive, you know, I often say that there's no other time I feel like I would want to be alive than this moment. There's a lot of scary things going on in the world. It's been an interesting last couple of years, but what a blessing, I think, to be alive at this moment, at this time, to impact it, to be a part of it, you know, to shape where things go. And I find that to be very empowering. So I just encourage anybody out there who is maybe on their journey looking for truth, looking for love, looking for answers, and who might come across those times where you feel hopeless or you feel doubtful, to recognize that, for one, you're not alone. There's so many people around the world who are struggling and fighting. And when I say fight, I mean that in so many ways, right? Like, sometimes we fight by showing love. We fight by speaking our voice. You know, we fight with our hands, but there's so many different ways that we stand up for injustice and for stand up for what's right. And so just recognize that you're not alone. There's people all over the world just like us who care about what's going on in the world, who are looking for answers. And even if we all don't know the perfect answer or where things are going, I do believe that this is why we're here on this planet. And the last thing I'll say is a mantra that I use. It's on some of my shirts. It's something that I use to help me get through prison. And if it helps you, then feel free to use it anytime, anybody hearing this. And that is, just repeat this to yourself. I am powerful. I am beautiful. I am free. So thank you, brother.
Man, that hits hard, man. Thank you so much. And one last request, if you could please just give our audience a rundown of where they can find you, website, social media, all that good stuff.
Yeah, my website is theconsciousresistance.com. That's always the best place to find my content. I'm on a number of different platforms, which are listed on there. I do have a YouTube channel. I mentioned earlier, I got deleted and I restarted it, but it's not really, I don't promote it too much because, you know, could get deleted any day now. But you can find, if you just search the Conscious Resistance Network on any of the video platforms. Also, I'm on Spotify and all that good stuff. I also mentioned the pyramidofpower.net again. You can check out the episodes we've released so far. And again, my books are downloadable for free. The documentaries are able to watch at the website. Dive in. You know, I've been producing this content for a while, and it's all there for people to use however they see fit.
Man, thank you so much, Derek. You are definitely a stand-up guy. Thank you for all you do. You're definitely for the people, and thank you for standing in your truth, which is a rarity these days. So thank you much, brother. Thank you so much for being a guest on the Hidden Gateway podcast. And to the audience, we really hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. As always, stay connected with us at thehiddengateway.com. Shoot us an email, like a lot of you do, at support@thehiddengateway.com. And remember, thank you for pushing your mindset to a better reality. This will conclude this week's episode. Until next time, stay positive, stay questioning, be love, and be free. The Hidden Gateway, out.